Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
One of the most important issues that Canadians are facing and is becoming more significant, more so than we perhaps anticipated, is the issue of food and the ability of Canadians to feed themselves. The cost is an incredible factor. And we're now at a time in Canada where almost 25% of our population, one of four, is dealing with some level of food insecurity. We're going to get into that issue a little later on. But we're going to begin with a study that was just released from Dalhousie University, from the Agri-Foods Laboratory. And a study which shows almost 60% of Canadians regularly eat food that's beyond its best before date. 23% do this constantly. Among millennials, 41% believe they've become ill after eating potentially unsafe food products in the past year. And there's another major issue here, but I think there's this theory in Canada that food somehow just magically appears on the shelf. These are companies, corporations that operate the food stores, move the food, buy it wholesale, sell it retail. It's a business. And business is not bad and corporations are not evil, regardless of what Mr. Singh may continually preach at you. And if our food corporations, if our food supply is threatened, if it becomes a challenging reality for the food sector, and it has, you and I and everyone else in this country are going to feel it. We're joined by our good friend, Professor Sylvain Charlebois, director of the Dalhousie University Agri-Foods Laboratory. They're the ones that put out this study and these numbers we're talking about. Sylvain, thank you very much. 60% of Canadians regularly eating food beyond its best before date. You and I first talked about this about a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, the actual number is 58%. I mean, there is a silver lining here. People are likely wasting less food, basically. And I think people are starting to understand what these best before dates are all about. They are arbitrary, really. They're set by the industry, enticing us to eat a food product at its optimal state, because obviously they want our business back, so they want to make sure that we're eating their product when it's fresh, when it's ideal. But at the same time, while people are wasting less, they may be risking more. That's the thing. And of course, in our study, we did ask specifically whether or not people were pushing the envelope a little bit and were enticed to actually consume these products because food prices are higher right now. And so you can see that a lot of people are under a lot of pressure, especially the younger generations. You can see that numbers are much higher for millennials and Gen Zs in particular.
Mm-hmm. As I said a couple of minutes ago in the introduction, millennials, 41% of millennials, you and I both have something stuck in our throats, 41% of millennials believe they have become ill after eating potentially unsafe food products, and that's in the last year. That's a lot of people, and I would imagine a lot of that has to do with financial, as you just said, the financial pressures on young people.
That's right. And of course, we're all concerned about that because health costs outweigh any food products you would want to throw away. So I think essentially, Roy, the one message I'm getting from our recent study is that we've all become different risk managers at home, basically, especially when it comes to food safety. And I've always believed that no matter what the CFIA does, regardless of what provinces do, municipalities to keep our food safe, and they do keep our food safe. Canada is actually one of the best performing countries in the world. Some people may not believe that, but if you actually look at the data, we're actually doing very well. But at the end of the day, consumers are responsible. They're the ones really that do play a very significant role when managing risk and keeping the number of people falling ill as low as possible.
Yeah, I've tried to have a conversation with people from time to time about the whole idea of where food comes from, how it gets on the shelf, and who runs the companies. They don't want to talk about it. People just don't want to talk about it. And when I make the case that it's really it's business, but it's a business with a responsibility quotient that's been questioned and investigated. But in this study of yours that you just released, I see that Canada's food sector, maybe we should define what the food sector is falling behind the United States in wholesale and industrial prices. So what is the food sector, Sylvain, and what does this mean to the consumer if we're falling behind the U.S. in wholesale and industrial prices? What exactly, what does that mean?
That's a great question, and this is why you and I, we've had many chats about our industry's competitiveness. And when we talk about the food industry, of course, it's from farm gate to plate. So farmers, processors, transportation companies, distributors, wholesalers, agents, brokers, everyone involved with our food. And the competitiveness of our industry is quite critical, especially when it comes to food safety. I mean, the worst business model is to poison people. No agri-food business. I actually firmly believe that there are no agri-businesses out there wanting to poison people. It's just not good for business. So obviously, but mistakes do happen. And mistakes will happen if they are oversights, lack of resources, lack of focus. And that's why you need a competitive industry. But right now, when you actually compare Canada's data with wholesale industrial prices, for example, the financial pressures that a lot of companies are under here in Canada versus the U.S., I mean, that gap is really increasing between the two countries. On the one side, in the United States, the economy is boiling. You saw numbers coming out last week. I mean, they are seriously talking about increasing interest rates in the U.S., and that's going to put even more pressure on Canada. So that gap is absolutely growing, and that's why I think it's important to focus on making sure that our agri-food sector remains as competitive as possible and avoid implementing policies. And, of course, I'm referring to the carbon tax or the carbon pricing policy specifically. Implementing some of these policies just only hurt businesses.
Now, you also, on your X feed today, at Food Professor, I looked at this. This one caught my eye. So we're falling behind the United States on the issue of wholesale and industrial prices, and you just explained that to us. But you also raised the specter, the potential specter, of companies saying, well, we just can't function in this country with federal regulations and let's call it the enthusiasm of the current government for the carbon tax. So we'll just pack up and move, maybe to the United States, where things are fiscally more manageable, and they'll welcome us with open arms. How much of a danger is that?
Oh, it's significant. And for people who may not understand what that means, people may think, well, who cares? If they move to the United States, they'll just sell their products to Canada. It's just a different location. Well, there's a border, a different currency, different climates. You see, Roy, the more you expand your global supply chain or your supply chain, the more likely you're exposing the entire system to factors that can absolutely impact the entire system, including food prices at retail. We saw that with Ukraine. We saw that with supply chains and COVID. And the more you increase risks, the more likely you'll see prices fluctuate. And that's exactly what's going on in two areas in Canada right now because of bad policies. That would be here in the Maritimes, where there's no processing. A lot of it actually happens outside our region. And BC right now, which is really hurting when it comes to manufacturing, policies are there to support small farms, small-scale operations. So the big players are just investing in Alberta and Washington State. They just don't want to do business in BC. And that could happen across the country if we're continuing on the path we're on right now.
And that would be reflected in pricing on the grocery shelves, right? And if our food companies, the ones that we have in this country now, if they were to say collectively, or a number of them, it's just impossible for us to operate in this Canada with its regulations and its enthusiasm for the carbon tax, so we're out of here. We would then be buying our food from our companies, but wholesaling them out of the United States back to us now. Yeah?
Absolutely. One concrete example of how manufacturing is so critical close to a market. Recently, in BC, we saw one company decide to go to Alberta because they couldn't find land, affordable land. They couldn't find a regime to support their model. So they went to Alberta to actually process poultry. Guess what, Roy? Right now, poultry prices in BC are anywhere between 25 to 30% more expensive than the national average in BC right now. So our friends out of BC are paying 25 to 30% for their whole chicken, drumsticks, chicken breasts, you name it, just because BC didn't think about implementing business-friendly policies to encourage investments, not discouraging it.
Wow. So our listeners in Kamloops, Kelowna, and Vancouver are shuddering right now. This probably isn't the best time for me to introduce the issue of the avian flu. We'll hold on to that for a second.
I would like to remind the colleague opposite that in the Ag Committee last week, one of Canada's foremost experts on food policy, Sylvain Charlebois from Dalhousie University, said, and I quote, Madam Speaker, we don't see the evidence of that, talking about the impact of carbon pricing on food in Canada. He they invited him to speak at the Ag Committee, Madam Speaker, so I think we have it here.
He's quoting you.
Yes, he is, but he wasn't reading his notes. He should have, because I never said that.
Have you heard from the minister yet?
No, I have not, unfortunately.
Okay.
He has mentioned my name a few times, but no, he has not apologized. And frankly, Roy, I don't expect anything. Frankly, I think that Minister Guilbeault is dealing with a lot of issues right now, and whether it's
yes.
plastics or carbon pricing, he's out there to save the world. So I don't want to get in the way, really. Would you want me to do that, Roy?
Yes. Yes, I would. Absolutely. That's why I keep playing that clip for you. Just to nudge you. I'm like the tugboat. I want to nudge you in the proper direction.
I'm pleased with what's going on right now with carbon pricing in particular because...
Yeah, let's talk about that, Sylvain. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that over the last 5 to 7 years, Canada was sleepwalking through carbon pricing policies without really asking tough questions. And what I'm hearing right now, both from media and Canadians, are tough questions. So what are we doing with carbon pricing? Why not consider opportunities with natural gas? Are we measuring the impact of carbon pricing on the environment? And so now if we're giving back money to businesses and Canadians, so what is the purpose of this particular policy? And you spoke about Saskatchewan earlier. I mean, we learned this week that in Saskatchewan, the government is not collecting any carbon tax anymore since, I believe, earlier this year. But people will still get their rebate. So
yeah, that's for home. That's for heating. That's for heating products. They're not collecting the carbon tax on heating products.
That's right. Same as the Atlantic, basically.
Right.
And so I do believe that there's a lot of confusion out there, and a lot of breaches in the spirit of the policy itself, which is often undermined by the government right now, the government that's in office right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am pretty pleased with what's going on right now, because I think that's probably why Liberals are down in the polls because so far we, a lot of Canadians wanted to support an environmental policy, but more and more we're starting to figure out that it's not really environmental policy. It's more about wealth distribution or really, well, good politics, but bad policy.
Yeah, Daryl Bricker from Ipsos told us that the carbon tax is to the Liberals what the GST was to the Mulroney Progressive Conservatives in the early 90s. This is just a virtual replay.
The GST, there was a purpose.
Well, I guess, yes, there was.
Liberals recognized that they couldn't scrap it either, and now everyone understands the spirit behind the GST.
Yeah.
But the carbon tax, nobody really understands why it is there, and is it effective?
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.